from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Monday, May 18th, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster ordered state lawmakers back to the statehouse Friday for a special session focused on redrawing the state's congressional map. Following opening remarks, South Carolina Democrats took the stand to explain why they disagree with redrawing the districts before the midterm elections. Representative Cambrell Garvin said eliminating the state's only Democratic-leaning district evoked memories of the Jim Crow era.
A yes vote is, in fact, a vote to strip 28% of African-American voters in this state, or approximately 1.4 million citizens, of their voice in Congress. A yes vote is a vote for Jim Crow-like policies that suppress and dilute the votes of minority communities.
Lawmakers are facing a looming deadline to pass the maps before May 26th. South Carolina primaries start June 9th, but early voting will start in just 2 weeks. Some Republicans in the state Senate have warned a redrawn map could unintentionally create more competitive districts for Democrats. Following a tense budget process, several closed-door personnel hearings, and speculation about her job, Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools Superintendent Crystal Hill says she's not going anywhere. James Farrell has more.
This year's budget process exposed friction between Hill and the CMS board, and when the board called an emergency closed meeting to discuss unspecified personnel matters just hours after passing the budget this week, it prompted rumors about the status of Hill's job and whether she was resigning. In response to an inquiry from WFAE, CMS spokesman Tom Miner told WFAE that Hill, quote, has no intentions of resigning, rather her focus remains steadfast on serving the students, staff, and community of CMS with unwavering dedication. James Farrell, WFAE News.
The Board of Education has called a special meeting tomorrow night to discuss personnel matters. Charlotte City Council will hold a meeting this afternoon to make possible adjustments to the city manager's proposed $4.5 billion budget, which calls for a 7% property tax rate increase that would primarily fund raises for police and firefighters. The meeting is at 2 and will be on YouTube. Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden is responding to reports of overcrowding inside the county jail. Multiple inmates tell the Charlotte Observer they're sleeping on cots, don't have hot water, and get little help filing grievances. In a YouTube video last week, McFadden acknowledged the jail population has climbed over 2,000 inmates, a record high.
In 2018, we had a population of 1,561. During COVID, we had 1,400, 1,300, but we've never had the numbers of 2,000 or 2013. And I'm very concerned about that.
McFadden confirmed inmates are sleeping on cots to make room and said the jail briefly lost hot water during installation of a new heater. He denied allegations that the jail was out of toilet paper. He also blamed the overcrowding in part on stricter pretrial release requirements under the recently passed IRENAS law. North Carolina collected nearly $1 billion more in tax revenue in 2025 than originally expected, according to an updated revenue forecast released Friday. Adam Wagner has more.
State economists project North Carolina will collect about $2.6 billion more dollars this biennium than originally expected, for a total of about $71.2 billion. That's a key number for ongoing budget negotiations because it guides how much lawmakers have to spend. Much of the growth is tied to higher-than-expected income tax collections due to a strong stock market and corporate bonuses. Last week, Republican leaders of the House and Senate announced a budget framework that simultaneously lowers personal income tax rates while increasing pay for state employees and teachers. Lawmakers did not immediately announce how they plan to pay for those raises. Now, we have at least part of the answer. Negotiations on the full budget are ongoing, with legislative Republicans targeting a vote in mid-June. Adam Wagner, North Carolina Newsroom, Capital Bureau.
The University of North Carolina at Greensboro is launching a bioindustrial workforce training and research program next January. WFDD's Amy Diaz reports.
It's called NC Biomission. The program is designed to prepare students to enter the growing field of biotechnology, which centers on converting organic materials into things like textiles, bioplastics, and fuels. Officials estimate the industry will support 1 million jobs in the country by the end of this decade, though qualified workers are currently in short supply. UNCG is working with industry leaders to develop the courses for the new certificate program so students gain the skills employers are looking for. It will be a blend of online and in-person learning, open to all majors, as well as adult learners and veterans. The school received $2 million to launch the program from BioMade, a manufacturing institute sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense. It's one of six educational and workforce development projects the institute has funded this year. In Winston-Salem, I'm Amy Diaz.
If you came of age in the 2010s, there's a decent chance Broad City made you feel a little more seen, or at least a little less weird. Now, co-creator and comedian Ilana Glazer is touring a new stand-up show about getting older, becoming a parent, and trying to stay sane in a world she says has gone crackers. She'll be in Charlotte this week and spoke with our Nick Della Canale.
I wanted to start with Broad City because I think, like, for a lot of millennials, that show captured, like, a very specific era of young adulthood. Broke, anxious, chaotic, stoned, but still optimistic.
Yep.
But now your audience is getting older. I want to know, what is it like performing for people who are, in a way, growing up with you?
I mean, it's a privilege. I'm talking about the world today and how it really, I mean, brother, has it gone crackers? Is it just me?
I don't think you're the only one who
it's
thinks that.
It's gone crackers. And it's like, I really feel like it's a story coming from a handful of people in power. When I go out into the world and I do stand up all around the country, all around the world at this point, people are way more on the same page. So for me, like I feel so actually hopeful about taking the world back into the hands of the people, making this world for working people, for families, for communities, because of a general consensus that like five guys shouldn't own everything. So it's a privilege to me. I feel like when we're in a time when our reality is being systematically fractured by a handful of guys who hold the algorithm, it's like I actually go out and get to see that people that I've been sharing thought space with for like 15 years now, we're still on the same page.
And a lot of your new material gets into what you're talking about, like billionaires, politics, climate anxiety. And these are like really big, like existential things. Why are you drawn to make jokes about them?
You know, I think it's like, I have an anxiety about not sharing reality. I kind of, even at a young age, growing up in the suburbs and always at the suburbs of New York on Long Island and always being drawn to the city, I felt like I wasn't sharing reality with the people I was in community with. And when I got to New York City, I felt like, you know, just a similar mentality. And what I need to do for myself is make sure I'm sharing reality. It's not me who's crazy, right? The world's crazy. And then I need to laugh about it. And, you know, laughing about it for me helps me, you know, cope with the sadness of all the, you know, the loss in the wake of the destruction, I suppose. But, you know, I also find it helps me like confront it and build a better world because I can laugh it off, process it through without it like taking too much from me, and then look forward and say, how am I going to make this world better for people who are kids now?
You also gave an interview to the New York Times recently with a quote that kind of made me laugh. You said, "I'm still horny. I like weed. I love people. I love to dance," which feels like a very reassuring life update.
Yes. Oh, I'm so
But you're also now a mother.
Yep.
How has that changed you, or has it?
You know, the way that it's changed me is that it's like peeled like so many layers of the onion back to see like the most potent, rich person I've always been, but perhaps had layers on top that were meant to be protective. That quote was in the context of being a mom for the past 5 years. And I really had this idea growing up that when you become a parent, you change and you turn into this edited version of yourself. But I actually feel like I was more edited before. And now I feel much more secure in embracing who I already am. And that person is horny, likes to get high, likes to dance, likes to
you know, be real, messes up, you know, maybe sometimes it's tired, but like, it's okay. It feels much more okay these days.
So you performed in Charlotte back in 2018, and that was like during the Broad City era. And Charlotte is like one of those southern cities, I think, that doesn't always fit the stereotype that people imagine. Do crowds here surprise you?
Dude, this is, wait, so the last time I performed in Charlotte, though, I think was 2023, in fact.
Oh, okay.
I think I was at the Night Theater, too. And this last time I performed in Charlotte, it was so much fun. What surprised me was, honestly, I was so surprised to be embraced in the way that I was. And I feel actually like excited this time to go with a little bit more security and not question marks of what are they going to think of me? Like, I had so much fun performing for you guys. You guys were picking up what I was putting down. And it was just so, so much fun. I love performing in southern cities. I feel like most fish out of water there. And it's just, there's like an energy, you know, to being like kind of the odd one out. It's fun.
And yet I think that you do draw the other people who probably feel that way into the theater. So it's sort of that sense of community.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that Broad City meant a lot to people because, like, underneath the chaos, that show was really about, like, friendship and surviving adulthood. Mm. What do you hope that people leave your shows with now?
Well, I definitely hope that there's a feeling of friendship and community at the live shows, and knowing that like you are not alone. The world is crazy, but like we are gonna get through this. I mean, I explicitly say we are going to get through this, and we are gonna build a better world. I hope that people feel like a sense of shared reality with their local community, and get the feeling that their neighbors have their back because they can laugh at the same things and have a shared sense of values. Like, a lot of people think my comedy is political, but like, I don't see it that way. I see it more like values-based. Like, I think it's common sense to wish, you know, the best for your neighbor and hope that your fellow Americans have their basic needs met. That's really it. And I really hope that everybody like who comes to one of my shows this tour can get that sense that their neighbors like wish the best for them, and that there's more people who think this way than perhaps social media tells them every day.
Ilana Glazier will perform at the Night Theater on May 28th as part of her new stand-up tour. Ilana, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you, Nick. This is so uplifting. I really appreciate it. And I'm so looking forward to performing down in your city.
And for Monday, May 18th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.